All right, welcome to the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast. Joined as always by Brandon, Shane, and Will. How are you guys doing today?
Solid.
We're doing so good.
And we're joined by our guy from our New York chat, Tommy. Welcome in, man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Did you guys have a meltdown this morning watching 10 games at once like I did, or no?
Yeah. Oh, see, no, for you, it's the morning. For me, it's the afternoon. For me and Tommy, it's the afternoon.
Fair point.
And Will.
And, yeah. Did anyone feel okay with that? Because I did not. That was insane.
The early slate, we'll say that.
I was not happy with the 1 o'clock slate having that many games at the same time.
Yeah, that was exhausting.
Too many.
8 or 9 is fine. 10, I couldn't keep up with. What I also
can only imagine the headache for Red Zone having to produce that.
Oh, jeez. Oh. Have like 20 screens? Yeah. Oh, my God. You know what else was a headache for, I'm sure for Shane, was Caleb Williams. Welcome to the Young Quarterback Report. Caleb Williams, you're our highlight today. Shane, go ahead.
Caleb Williams. I don't want to say too much about him yet because it's only his second game as a pro, so I'm not, I don't feel like it's right for me to just say, yeah, he's a bust, you know. What I will say, though, is when I look at him, it's like, this is why I had doubts, because, you know, the way that he played at USC, that's what everybody was praising him for, was how he was able to escape and throw deep and do all these things, you know. But, you know, when you look at the most successful NFL quarterbacks, yes, they have those abilities, but they don't rely on it on every play. They're not just trying to play hero ball all the time. And it feels like he's still playing exactly like he did at USC, and that's just not – that style of quarterback play is just not sustainable in the NFL. Because the DBs are much smarter and the defensive linemen are bigger, stronger, and faster. They're not going to let you get out and escape as easily. And, yeah, I mean, we're seeing the effects of it. I mean, 2 games now, he hasn't had a touchdown yet. And, but he has had, 2 picks.
So, I don't know what happened last week.
Yeah, 2. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. You know, I mean, despite that, this week definitely felt like a bit of an improvement. I mean, he had a higher, much higher completion percentage, more yards, but it's still just like he looks very lost out there. And, you know, we see the Patrick Mahomes comparison all the time with him. And I get it, but the thing is, Mahomes came into a team where he had Alex Smith to learn behind for a year, who I think is a much better quarterback than most people will admit. I mean, nothing too crazy about him, but he was very smart, very consistent. And not to mention he also had, or I guess has, but at the time did also have, you know, Andy Reid, one of the sharpest offensive minds in the league, and Kelsey, who was in his prime, Hill, who was also in his prime, and a great offensive line. Caleb doesn't have any of that. He has an idiot defensive head coach who I can't stand, and an offensive coordinator who I think is a clown. You know, terrible offensive line. He's got okay receivers, but I mean, you know, they haven't exactly done much up to this point, which not necessarily their fault. They need a ball delivered to them accurately, but I think there's a lot of refining that needs to happen with Caleb before we see him looking like a number one overall pick. And I just don't feel like it's going to happen anytime soon with given his situation, but that's just me. I don't know. I mean, you know, I hope he improves. I don't want anyone to have a bad career, but this is just, I just gotta call it how I see it, you know. So yeah, but you know, we'll keep watching and see what happens.
Brandon, how do you rate the Texans here through two games? Good or bad?
It's not pretty, but they're getting the job done. So I expect a little more to start the season, especially who you started the season against. I mean, the Colts are no pushover, but you are the far better team. You are the far better team on paper in both these games, and you won by a combined, 8 points in these first 2 weeks. You won by 2 last week and 6 this week. I mean, last week, week one, you know, the first month of the season in general is never, you know, we can't judge off of that right away. But
it's preseason.
Yeah. But the Texans, I thought, would come out a little bit better than that. I thought they'd win both games by at least double digits. And they're barely winning games by literally like in 2 weeks, you know, 8, you split that down the middle. So they've won by an average of 4 points. So I'm like, that's not great. I mean, you're still winning, but that's not great, especially against two teams that you should beat by a lot more. But I mean, they don't look terrible. Like tonight, like last week was kind of a shootout, and you know, you put up 29, which is, you know, it's decent. But this week you put up 19, and the Bears don't have a bad defense, but this week you put up 19, but what shot them in the foot tonight was penalties. Well, both teams tonight, there's 22 total penalties in this game, but Texans committed more than half of them. They committed 12, or no, 13, and the Bears committed 9. So a lot of those penalties were in situations where they would pick up a first down, have the play called back, and then it would kill the whole drive. So they could have won by more tonight. It was just penalties kind of killed them. But, you know, and also Joe Mixon being out for a good chunk in that second half for like a stretch for almost a good part of the fourth quarter didn't help either. Well, so, you know, that played a part in it. But I'm not like massively concerned yet because, like I said, you know, it's the first month. So I'm not massively, you know, hitting the panic button yet. But if they play like another like 2 or 3 weeks, I'm going to be really concerned about their play because they should be blowing teams out by, you know, 13 to 17 points every week. And they're not quite hitting that yet. I mean, they'll get there. They're too talented not to. So, you know, and like these first 2 weeks have been absolutely insane across the board. So when I look at it, I think they're good for now. It's not pretty, but they're getting the job done, and they'll find their stride. Because remember, T.J. Stroud's only a second-year quarterback. So, he was great last year, but he's still getting to that elite level still. Like, he's great, but he's still getting there. So you got to give him time. They didn't have Mixon last year. They didn't have Diggs last year. You're getting those guys involved too, along with Tank Dell and Nico Collins plays a part. So it's still a little bit of a process, but they'll get there. They'll be fine. But I think for now, for 2 weeks, it's all right. But you definitely need to see a little bit more out of them.
You know what the funniest thing? And I'm sorry for jumping in.
No, please go ahead. We have the crew to jump in whenever you guys want. Go ahead.
I talk to Brandon every day, and the fact that he's just making all these excuses for the Texans. And this is the guy that reacts to every of 162 games of the Yankees every year.
You're damn right I do. I mean, you know why, though? Just because the whole league struggles in the first month of a football season. The whole league doesn't struggle in the first month of the MLB season. Like, you know, there's going to be teams that start out hotter and teams that are colder. There's more, you know, that's how it is. And the thing is, 162 games, especially, it's like, they're at least, the Texans tonight are at least winning games, like, the first 2 weeks that they should win. They're at least winning them. I mean, it's not pretty, but they're winning them. The Yankees weren't doing that. It's like, they, you know, we're a football show, but it's like, when you compare the two, the Yankees were losing to a lot of teams they shouldn't have, and they still are. So That's my gripe. That's why I'm so intense with them. Plus, the Yankees are the Yankees. Like, the Texans are not the Chiefs. You like, we're not considering say, oh, you know, they should be winning the Super Bowl every year, every other year. The Yankees is different. It's like, no, you have that expectation. You better just go out there and play your best every day. And when they don't do it, that's what makes me angry. But it is true, though, Tommy. That's true. But yeah, but.
That's why I love you, brother. That's why I love you.
Thank you,
Tommy. I'll let you continue with the New York theme. Talk about the Jets and Giants and what they did today.
Is that my cue?
Go ahead. That's your cue. Go ahead, Tommy. Go ahead.
Right, so,
Jets and Giants. Right, so go ahead.
I am a very proud Giants fan, and we lost 2-7 field goals today. I will honestly give it, you know, to you guys from there because I have nothing to say.
Seven
field goals. Come on.
Will, do you have anything, any response to that? Does it feel like what we saw from the Steelers game last week?
Honestly, I was surprised no touchdowns until that final thing by the Giants. But, you know, the Giants are the Giants, and Daniel Jones, Daniel Jones. So I kind of saw it coming.
Yeah, all right. Just, yeah, pour some more salt in the wounds.
But it is kind of true, though. It's just like you expect, like, Malik Nabers had a day, and, like, I blamed him for the one drop because it was a bad drop. But he had a day. And you still couldn't win. What did he have? 10 catches and like a buck 30.
Dude, he looked like the guy that we wanted to draft.
Yes, yeah, that's the thing. He did. And
Singletary had a great game too.
7 field goals is horrible. And then the Jets. Yes, you won. And like I know in our TCH, I know Josh is happy. I know Matt's happy. I know they're, you know, the Jets guys are happy. But even they said, they were like, this is still ugly, and the only reason we won is because Will Levis sucks.
I'll be honest. I don't know how you're happy if you're a Jets fan today, even though you got the win. Like, that was so bizarre. And so many of the 1 o'clock games were kind of like this, where they were just bizarre and weird in ways. I'll try to speedrun some of them, but like, yikes! Yeah, I don't think you are happy. Let's see, who else is unhappy today? The Broncos. What the fuck was that fourth quarter for the Denver Broncos? I genuinely am so confused by all of what happened in that fourth quarter because you're in the red zone with about 3 minutes left. You're good to go. All you got to do is get it in the end zone. What, 2 minutes left? Get in the end zone. Take your chance, right? You're down by 7. Take your chance. No, take the field goal. Dumb. You're in the red zone. And then you don't do an onside kick and you just basically let them run the clock out in a game that, to be honest, in the fourth quarter, you probably should have won. And I like Justin Fields today. I think they should stick with Fields. I don't want to see Russell Wilson touch this field at all. I'd rather not see that, even though I bet against it. But Tommy, you're shaking your head in disgust as well.
Well, so here's what I don't understand. And maybe other people, including head coaches, don't understand. Do they not understand the new kickoff rules?
Not fully yet, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it.
Like, yeah. That's the only thing I can chalk it up to that it actually makes sense.
Like, these guys have practiced that, right? They've practiced that in practice. You've practiced that in preseason, and now you've had a week to digest it. You should know it by now. And to still, like, everybody's like, oh, they're going to struggle for the first, like, you know, half of the season. I'm like, but they shouldn't be. They're professional athletes. How hard is it to understand what the kickoff rule is? You've been doing it all summer. It's like if I sat in a classroom and learned the same types of math equations for a whole summer, it'd be beaten into my brain. I would do it in my sleep. So the fact that professional athletes can't grasp the concept of what to do and not do on a kickoff is ridiculous to me. You've done it the whole summer. You did it in preseason during games. You literally were that was a new rule change that you knew was coming even before the summer. So I don't understand why it's taking, you know, 2 weeks for teams to still get it down. I mean, you have a brain fart. It happens. But, like, I don't get it. It's you have one job. You have one job. It's not hard.
I swear to God, Brandon, I'm with you. Like think about the pitch clock in baseball. These guys figured it out in like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yep.
They had all summer to figure out this dynamic kickoff. Will, are you surprised by how Sean Payton and the Broncos kind of handled this situation?
Yeah, honestly, the Broncos during that point, they were a bit, I would say, deoriented with how they gone about it. It really showed that I'm not even sure if Sean Payton is the guy, to be honest, but also, you know, Bo Nix, you know, he's still a rookie, still learning, but Sean Payton is, you know, he's supposed to know this and supposed to be well at these type of situations because he been in these situations numerous times with the New Orleans Saints. So honestly, it's a bad look for this, for Sean Payton and the Broncos. But yeah, it's, I don't know. It's basically the Broncos fans. I kind of feel bad for them because there's probably going to be another year of mediocrity.
You know who else is mediocre, Will, and I'll get you started on them. Let's do the Baltimore Ravens. What the hell went wrong today?
Yeah, but well, I have to say this. 0-2. That's all I got to explain with that one, but 0-2. Both first time Lamar Jackson, 0-2, start of his career. Terrible start. Same thing with John Harbaugh and Baltimore Ravens since 2015. So it's been a while. So honestly, I have to say bad management, especially going down the clock, losing to Gardner Minshew but the defense did all right for the Raiders, especially Max Crosby getting pressure on them. But man, I always think with the Ravens is that, and it's always thing with Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens is like, yeah, Lamar Jackson flashy, he can do all this, and he's a superstar, but when it comes time to clutch time and, you know, he put your balls in his hands to get you to victory, I don't know. It's really hard to see him, the Ravens, and Lamar Jackson be any type of situation. We trust them, especially when this happens in the playoffs. So, man, I don't know, man. Honestly, this just shows that Ravens got some more things to work at and try to develop if they want to get back over 500, at least at 500. So, yeah, it's another bad game, especially in the close ending.
This is exactly what I wrote. I wrote, the Ravens just played in the Raiders' hands. They played Raiders football. Slow, methodical, field goals, stupid game. That's the whole thing I wrote.
And the thing that's so weird about it is that, you know, the Raiders only had 27 yards rushing. The Ravens had 151. And Raiders had 233 yards passing. Ravens had 232. So basically, I mean, 1 yard difference there, basically the same. But it's like,
and think about it. The Raiders, they used to have Josh Jacobs on their team.
Yeah.
An absolute bell cow who is now on the Packers.
It's not a great look for Baltimore when, you know, like Will was saying, if you can't finish in clutch time against the Raiders in Baltimore, that's pretty bad.
So,
it's a fluke. I don't know, but
you the AFC North at this point.
Oh my god. Speaking of that, the Bengals. So the Bengals today lost their heads again. I honestly think this is going to be the case with Ja'Marr Chase all year. He's just going to lose his head and they're going to crash because of that. At least it feels that way.
Typical wide receivers being divas.
Yep, mm-hmm. Pretty typical. I got to look at the rest of this division.
It's not good. Like the Browns barely won, but they suck. Like, the Steelers, okay, you had two easy games, so I get it, but you're not great. Ravens 0-2 in games that they probably should have won. And then you have the Bengals now, who Jamar Chase is a head case all of a sudden, and they can't figure out, they can't close games. They had a drive the end of this game in the fourth quarter. All you had to do, because you were up by two, take time off the clock. They were running the ball effectively, especially in that last drive. And then they just went away from it, went three and out, and you turn the ball over pretty much to Patrick Mahomes with an eternity left. He takes doesn't take the clock down. They you commit a penalty on top. Like, the penalty ended up winning the game for the Chiefs. So the fundamentals have not been there for any of the AFC North teams for 2 weeks. So it's preseason, but right now, that's looking like one of the, and we thought, I mean, listen, we thought through the first 2 weeks they'd be like really, really competitive games for all like those teams for one reason or another. And they've been winning these tight, kind of grimy, they've been competing in these kind of like, you know, it's the AFC North. These games always come down to like a couple points, let alone one score. But it's ugly football for all four of those teams in the AFC North through 2 weeks. And I didn't think that would happen. I thought the Ravens would handle their business. I thought the Bengals would not lose to the Patriots week one. I thought the Steelers were going to get killed by the Falcons. Not killed maybe, but maybe lose by like 10. They only allowed 10 points on defense, which is pretty damn good. And then, but that's the Steelers, you know, MO is defense. And then the Browns are just the Browns. They're just blah. Deshaun Watson sucks. He even left the game today, and they brought even Jameis Winston for a spell. So I don't know what the hell they're planning to do there.
Are we get into the Deshaun Watson of this all? Because he is not good at football.
No, he's not.
You know who else isn't good at football, and I'm kind of on the I'm done with you list? Jacksonville Jaguars. What the hell was that today? They did nothing of any consequence today. I'm at the I'm done with you list there. I can't believe I'm saying that.
That would actually that would be a good top five if you want to do that.
What, the I'm done with you list?
I would like that.
I'll give it to you right now. Panthers, I'm done with y'all.
Panthers are finished.
Titans, I'm done with y'all. Jags, I'm done with y'all. Patriots, yep. I've been done with y'all for a few years now. Giants.
They just got some fight in them, though.
Yeah, we'll talk about them in a second. I'm interested in what you and Will have to say. Giants, done. Jets, I'm kind of done. I've been done for a while. Broncos, I'm very done. Otherwise, everyone I'm kind of interested in.
Yeah, my boy Bo Nix is going up in flames through 2 weeks.
I don't think it's just Bo. I think that whole organization is just fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's just trash. It's an organization.
Yeah. I think Bo really is doing not too bad given his situation.
Yeah, I was going to say that, Shane, because we talked about, he's in a great situation with Sean Payton. It doesn't look that way. It looks much worse than we thought. You know what? Let's do Seahawks Patriots. Will, I'll start with you. An overtime game that probably shouldn't have been in hindsight, I guess, or at least early in the week. What was your overall takeaway?
Yeah. Honestly, at first, I was a little bit pissed because I feel like we could have beaten the Patriots and put them for halftime, and I feel that this was at least a game that definitely go to OT, and I agree with that. But look at how the Patriots play defensively. Mm-hmm. I see this as a game that really came down mostly to who can make the right plays and who could be do what in certain moments. And Geno Smith did it, and Brissett, you know, he fell under pressure. Honestly, enough against Jacoby Brissett. Like, he is a well-good, like, steady starter, but he's, you know, when he got put his hands and he got to do hero ball for him, he's not really that MO guy. He usually just gives you the right plays when you need it, but not when it comes down to most of the pressure, depending on some circumstances.
Shane, but is this a concerning? Continue, Will. Sorry, my bad. Yeah. Go ahead.
But I felt that really the Seahawks need to do. I think Geno did pretty well for himself. I was really pissed because there's been times I feel like this offense could have scored more than it need to, especially with a Bryant with a Grubb offense, which really scored well in the college. Though we're talking about pros, but he has some innovative type offensive schemes. But man, I just felt that we could have done more offensively, but we did get the job done at the end.
Are the alarm bells going off here in Seattle, Shane, or are you positive still? Are you still leaning the positive side?
I'm leaning positive. I think I think Geno really, you know, and we were talking about this a bit in the offseason, like, yeah, I want to see Sam Howell eventually, but I'm not quite ready to just be done with Geno right now, because I think we saw flashes of what he could be, and just, you know, given the right offensive coordinator, I think he could be pretty good. Of course, age is a factor, but, you know, he's a lot stronger and faster now than he was in his 20s. And this Ryan Grubb offense is very similar to what he did at West Virginia, where he was amazing. I think he's fine for now. The biggest problem was the run game. They could not get anything going on the ground. And I don't love Charbonnet. I think he's fine as a third down back to kind of mix in there. But as the main guy, which he's had to do a few times with, like, you know, Walker having injuries, but he's not good. he's not good at all. He's not the guy for it. So that was the biggest thing. And, you know, but I mean, the Patriots defense, the pass defense looked bad. But the biggest difference is their ground game was really, the Patriots ground game was really working, and they dominated time of possession. So that was how it stayed so close for so long, for the entire game. Because they just, you know, they were running nonstop and doing pretty well at it, you know. So, and, you know, in the end, obviously Seattle got it done. But, yeah, I think really, to me, it feels like this team is definitely, I don't want to say dependent, but they definitely count on the run game being there, so that way they can dominate time of possession. Because when they do that, then the defense stays a lot sharper, and, you know, and obviously, the defense is out there for too long, they start getting tired and give up those big plays. So, basically, I just hope for their sake that Kenneth Walker can be back sooner than later. Charbonnet is the number one guy. It's not gonna cut it for this team.
Let's see, games I'm not going, or we're not gonna go heavy on here. Cardinals Rams. I mean, look, like, the Rams are old. We talked about this last week. The Cardinals, injuries. The Cardinals look good offensively. I want to see a couple more weeks. Colts Packers. I'm sorry, I don't want to talk about a guy puking on a football. We can move on. that was probably the only interesting thing that happened in that game. Chargers, good running game. Otherwise, same kind of shit. Any Panthers game will probably heavily skip if it's gonna look
Panthers,
like. If it's gonna look like that. So I think those are the games we're gonna skip here. Group effort here.
May I interrupt?
Yes, real quick? Please interject. Go ahead.
Is Kyler Murray like actually kind of good?
No, he's good. He's good. He's good. When he's not hurt and playing Call of Duty, he's good.
When he's actually focusing on football instead of video games, he's fine.
He's good.
When he
he's
puts
good.
Video game roller down, he's all right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
when he has receivers.
When he actually says, "Oh, I'm actually gonna throw the ball to Marvin Harrison. It's not my fucking job to throw the ball anymore." let's see. Group effort here. I want a poll. All five of you. So all five of you, give me a yes or no. Saints are for real. What? No, whatever. I'm just kidding. Saints are for real. Yes or no? Give me.
Definitely. Yeah.
Can I go first?
Yes. Go.
No, they are not.
Okay. Will says yes. Shane.
I think it's too early to tell.
Brandon.
Thank you, Shane. Shane, I was
too
early to tell.
I have.
Reason to think.
Will says yes. I say a definite 100% yes.
Ooh. Yeah,
I don't think you can say that yet. Because here's the thing. They've started out hot, but.
But look who they've played.
Let's look at it. They played the Panthers, who we all know are trash, and they played the Cowboys, who, yeah, they had a good week one, but I feel like they're going to be kind of topsy-turvy this year. And, you know, the thing is, like, yeah, they're good now, but this team is very old. Is that longevity going to keep up? I'd be surprised if it did. So I think it's way too early to say that they're for real.
Here's why I say for real. Here's what I mean by that. I'm not being Cam Jordan and saying they go win a Super Bowl. I am not saying that at all.
No, I know.
What I'm saying is this: I still think the Bucks win the South, but I don't think the South is shit. I think Tampa and New Orleans both go in right now, and mm-hmm. I don't think there's a question on that. Will, why do you say yes? The Saints are for real.
Well, obviously, like what you said with the conference, but also. Honestly, I kind of feel a little bit of, I would say, an aura that, especially with Alvin Kamara, feels with this, with the offensive coordinator. I feel like this one, I feel like their offense is more, has a more, like, put more a little faith into themselves as a offensive team that I feel they built confidence, and I feel like it also built the confidence for Derek Carr. And especially with Alvin Kamara, because I feel like some of these plays are really pretty good. It's not predictable, like some offensive coordinator offense, like how they have, like especially with Shane Waldron. And also there's a huge thing about having those type of plays that you can go over top on a defense. And I feel like Derek Carr, given how great an arm he has, can really do that. And I think that it also puts some good faith to the defense as well. So honestly, I feel like it's basically on the offensive coordinator that they have, that how well they was able to put up points, those versus not good teams. But doing that on a consecutive basis, I think that's really, really a pretty good stance for them as far as the Saints go. So I don't know. I just feel like I'll just have more faith in that OC and basically the confidence for the rest of the team mostly.
Well, you do have to remember that his head coach is a defensive guy in Dennis Allen.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that more of a positive? Because I feel like actually, if you think about what this team has done in the 2 weeks, it's more of a positive somewhat with Dennis Allen. But Tommy, why do you say no for that pull there for the Saints?
I don't know what's going on with your mic, but you are sounding like you
is it, is it actually bugging again?
It sounds like you're down a hallway.
Is that better? Is that better?
Nope.
No.
Jesus.
No.
Keep trying.
Why do you say no? Why do you say no? I'll be Robert now. Why do you say no, Tommy? They're not for real.
The Saints are not for real.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've been hearing about Michael Thomas for like 5 years now. And I haven't seen anything.
That's pretty funny. I'm not
it's
even gonna
true.
Lie.
I mean that is part of it. And you know what's crazy too with the Saints is like we talk about how good they were today, but today was just Alvin Kamara. You take him away, that game is a lot closer. That was the AK show today. So, you know, last week you took care of a bad Panthers team. This week,
I mean, listen, I know Arrowhead or whatever they call it, GEHA Stadium or whatever that is now.
You just like Kansas City.
Yeah. I still call it Arrowhead.
And obviously Lambeau's up there.
Lambeau.
Yeah.
Soldier Field.
I'd say yeah. Seattle just because of the noise.
Yeah,
12th man.
I had to fix the audio, but
yeah,
Brandon,
Broncos altitude.
Can you continue on the Saints though with the Eagles, because I think that is interesting. So you said 3.5 for them for that line, but also just the overall fact that this is that litmus test too. And it could be for the Eagles thinking about the home field advantage, but continue on that now that the audio got fixed here.
Yeah, because it's definitely a thing where, and like I was telling the guys, I don't know how much of the audio cut out on your end, Robert, or if it got fixed or whatever. But it's basically what I said, it's a bunch of different points here. It's the most versatile quarterback in terms of the dual threat that you faced in the first 3 weeks. It's the best coaching staff you faced in the first 3 weeks. It's the best offensive line you faced in the first 3 weeks. It's the fastest defense you faced in the first 3 weeks. It's the most, and I think it's the most explosive offense you have faced in the first 3 weeks. So I think just the fact that you are underdogs at home to start this game for this next week, the fact that you are underdogs at home and you've put up 91 points the first 2 weeks, to be underdogs at home, no matter who it is, it's showing that people don't have as much faith in you as what is kind of the narrative that's out there now. So it's really interesting to me, because that's why I'm saying it's the first test for the Saints this year. And the thing is, it's a good test for Philly too, because now you're hearing a lot about this Saints team and how dominant they've been the first 2 weeks, especially against a division rival. So it's for both teams, that if that game can live up to what these two teams can throw down, that's going to be a real fun game next week. But I think that's the first real test for either team. And I think that game, like, no matter if Philly goes in at 2-0 or goes in at 1-1, you're going to get two of the best teams so far in the first, opening weeks in the NFL to basically decide in the first 3 weeks, really, who is the best of the best in the NFC? Because right now, the Niners didn't impress. They lost today to the Vikings. The Lions lost to the Bucks. Dallas obviously lost to the Saints. So when you look at the NFC as of right now, it's wide open. I mean, you beat the Packers already, and the Packers, they didn't have a great game today against the Colts, but they did enough to win. So right now, based on what it's shaping up to be for next week, that right there through the first probably month of the season, so next week's week three, but I'd say probably the first 4 or 5 weeks, that game right there in New Orleans is probably going to, at least in the early part of the season, the first third of this season, show you who the best in the NFC is.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be an interesting game. Shane, I'm going back to you for quarterback report here for our final two games of the night. Sam Darnold quarterback report, a special. I need a Sam Darnold report.
Yeah, man. Another really solid game from Darnold.
When I was saying Sam Darnold.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, against the winning week one against the Giants. Sorry, Tommy, but that wasn't much of a surprise. but this was a little more shocking. I don't know what it is about the Purdy era versus the Vikings, but he can't beat the Vikings for some reason. So, you know, there's that. But, yeah, I mean, Darnold is, you know, I think his year in San Francisco really helped him a lot. And
I said that last week.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I will say I might have been wrong about Darnold.
We're getting tired here. We're getting tired here. That's what's happening. Yeah, I'm sorry. We're getting tired.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever. I may have been wrong about Darnold being a bust, because at the time he definitely seemed like one. But I will say, it does prove us all correct that the Jets are a quarterback graveyard. because I mean, no, seriously, like, Geno gets drafted there, does terribly, bounces around to a couple different teams, and then has a resurgence in Seattle. Darnold gets drafted there, bus, bounces around to a couple teams, now he has a resurgence in Minnesota. We'll see if he keeps it up. But yeah, just, you know, a lot of what you saw in Darnold was early on, and like in college and whatnot, was just, you know, a lot of like the Caleb Williams type of playing, or Zach Wilson, just like running around like a chicken with his head cut off, throwing the ball just wherever and getting picked off, whatever. He's not doing that now. He's much more of just a calm, centered pocket passer. Not that he doesn't have the mobility, but he's not like totally relying on it. What's interesting about this game, though, is if you look at the box score or just the team stats or whatever, you would think that the Niners won this game by like two touchdowns.
Yeah.
Because they had about the same amount of yards, but the Niners had more first downs. They had, let's see, they had.
Well, look at the stats more, when they're big guys, real quick. Like,
yeah, they had less penalties. Yeah. They had the same amount of turnovers. Niners had almost 10 more minutes of possession on offense. Yet they lost. I don't know how, when you have all that going for you. That doesn't really make sense, but yeah. Purdy, though, you know, he was fine today. I mean, you know, he's just being Purdy. And Jordan Mason is still doing really well. You know, once McCaffrey's back, that's going to be a great 1-2 punch there.
We're looking at 6 weeks. Six.
Yeah, weeks. Probably. Yeah. What I'm wondering now, though, is, and we don't have to talk about this too seriously. It just crossed my mind, so I got to bring it up. What do we do if, let's say, Darnold keeps playing like this throughout the year, has an incredible season, 30 touchdowns, 4,000 yards, whatever. JJ comes back. What are the Vikings doing?
You see who wins the quarterback competition in camp, and you figure it out.
Yeah, that's
you have to wait. You have to wait until camp. You can't.
I'm just saying,
Shane, I would have to. I don't know if I'm pushing back or if I'm just making an alternate point. Think about JJ at Michigan. He was not he was not throwing the ball 50 times a game.
Right.
Yeah.
So he is not the guy that you need to drop back in the shotgun set. So whatever they want to do, I don't think that they need J.J. McCarthy. If they want Sam Darnold to fill that role, I think that's fine.
But that's why I think you have to figure it out in camp. And I gotta be honest, if he's playing this well, you don't think the Vikings are gonna field offers here in the offseason?
Oh yeah,
they're gonna get draft capital back. Again, we're talking way in advance here. I'd probably wait until like week 10 before we can seriously have this conversation. But yeah, there's going to be offers here. Maybe one from another New York team, namely the New York Giants, who might throw something out there. Or the Titans, who might throw something out there. There are teams that are going to throw shit out there and see what sticks. So, you know, we'll see. But again, I think we're taking for
granted. Could you imagine if Sam Darnold, just hypothetical, if Sam Darnold does come back to MetLife Stadium as a Giant? can you imagine the uproar in our area?
I think Darnold would work well in Dable's offense, I will say.
Isn't Sam Darnold a free agent this offseason?
He
only has a 1-year deal.
He's a free agent. It's not a trade. It's him testing the free agent market and being really interesting.
But that's what I'm saying though. It's like if he does really well, like, do they try to bring him back and keep starting, or do they say, well, we're gonna roll the dice with our number 10 pick? It's kind of like the Garoppolo Trey Lance situation with the Niners, a little bit.
But we haven't seen JJ play an NFL snap, right? So it's different sense that. And keep in mind, we only saw Trey Lance play 2 games, and I think Trey has a lot of potential still. So was that kind of unfair to him a little?
Like that currently, I don't.
Well, just saying, but no, he could. I don't know. Who knows?
So before we move on, do you guys actually think Trey Lance has it in him?
Yes.
No.
When you saw him preseason, the answer is yes.
Hell no. He's the Cowboys' third string quarterback. He's not even second.
Will, yes or no on Trey?
I believe in Trey Lance.
I'm gonna make a bold declaration here. If I'm the Cowboys, I would not have paid Dak, and I would have said Trey Lance go out there and be my starter. I totally would have. Not even a question.
Etch that in stone real quick, and
God. Yeah, let's put that on the same tablet that they have the Code of Hammurabi on. But if anybody is qualified to speak on North Dakota State quarterbacks, I think it's me. So hold on a second. Because Trey Lance coming out of college got a lot of the same, not the exact same, but a lot of the same hype Carson Wentz did. That, there's talent there.
They traded 3 first-round picks for him.
Like, this is why it's insane. Like, Carson Wentz pre-injury had it in him. He the injury is what set the downfall in motion. But Trey Lance is not even Carson Wentz. Trey Lance is smaller. Trey Lance is skinnier. Trey Lance has less of an arm that Carson Wentz did. Slower. Like, Trey Lance is none of the things that Carson Wentz was, and Carson Wentz is now a backup for Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. So, like, I like
I don't think he does have it in him. And then the thing is, Trey Lance didn't even impress in preseason against guys who were twos and threes.
He was number one on my stud list. He was good, but yeah, the picks aside, he was good. Five
picks.
Yeah,
picks aside, I'm not gonna worry about. I mean, it is preseason, so I'm not gonna take it that seriously. But
I was gonna say you're not gonna worry about preseason when a guy is throwing interceptions against twos, threes, and fours.
I still have some belief in that. I still have stock. I'll just put it that way. I still have enough.
Let's put it this way. I don't, regardless of how good he may or may not be, I highly doubt he will ever be a starter in this league.
Yeah, regardless of us debating this, it's going to be incredibly hard for him to actually start and somewhere.
Unless,
anywhere.
Like, Dak is injured and whoever their second string guy is, I can't.
It's Cooper Rush.
Cooper Rush. Unless they both go down with injuries, then he has to start. Then maybe, but
to finish off today,
an apocalypse doomsday situation for the Dallas Cowboys.
And then they signed Ryan Tannehill. No,
he's still a free agent, by the way. He'll get a job here soon.
Oh man, nobody wants to get Ryan Tannehill as far away from a football field as possible.
Ryan Tannehill wants a backup job in a competitive place. He's gonna get a job soon. I'm pretty confident.
You could do way worse than that for a backup quarterback. You could do way worse than Tannehill.
Yeah. Quarterback time. For Tommy, let's do Baker Mayfield to finish off the night.
The president of Team Baker.
All right, so you said quarterback tie for Baker Mayfield.
Quarterback time. Go ahead. Give me your thoughts on quarterbacks. Give me your thought on the quarterback that is Baker Mayfield.
Jared Goff. How about that?
That's funny.
I feel like he has been so underrated for so long. He was in the Stafford Goff swap. I've always been on Team Goff.
And you also have Goff, and it's funny because they played each other today. So Goff and Baker are really interesting, right? Because it's like, you know, both guys. You know, I mean, Goff a little bit, you know, Goff had a better situation coming to with the Rams than Baker with the Browns.
Well, yeah, he never got to live in a stadium, you know.
At home with Baker Mayfield, baby. But it's like, you know what's crazy, though? And I'll serve it up to you a little bit, Tommy. But Baker Mayfield in that regard, like the maturing that he has done in his career. And like just the fact that it took him a minute to kind of settle in and also quite literally settle down in more ways than one. He's married now. So it a lot of that changes a man. So a lot, especially with Baker Mayfield, he needed that. Plus, he just needed to just mature in the NFL as a quarterback rather than just trying to be the when you're in Cleveland, when you're the Cleveland Browns quarterback, you have to be the hero because Cleveland sucks.
Brandon, I agree with you on so many levels, and the reason that I like Baker is because he could have gone down the wrong path, and he could have been a Johnny Manziel, gotten a bunch of money, and went down the wrong path. He didn't. He wasn't a bad guy. He never was a bad guy. And he reps Cleveland, the most awful fucking city in the Northeast U.S. And he was just like, all right, cool. I'm down with this. Dude, imagine being a handsome guy making $1 million every minute and be like, oh, cool. I'm down with hanging out in Cleveland. And he did that. So yes, I am on Team Baker.
It takes a lot to be a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, and it takes a lot to be a successful quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. And the thing
he was the first.
I will absolutely listen to any argument against that from anyone that's on this podcast. But I don't think there is one.
I don't think there is one either. He's good. He's very, very good.
Baker Mayfield really listen, I know it's early, but Baker Mayfield, man, you keep playing like this, you're playing yourself into the MVP conversation.
Yeah. I wish they didn't change comeback player of the year. I wish they didn't change it to injury based, because that it makes the voting like so shit.
I think Baker should have gotten it last year instead of Joe Flacco.
We're talking about that.
We were pretty split on both of them, and both had an excellent case. So, all right, movie time. We did Hell or High Water this week. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, Tommy, but it is very, very good. So, Shane, go ahead. Why'd you pick Hell or High Water for this week?
Well,
may I interrupt real quick?
Yes, please do. Sure.
All right. I don't know what like type of music you guys are into, but there is a gentleman named William Elliott Whitmore, and he sings a song called Hell or High Water.
Ooh, okay.
I would absolutely encourage you to give it a go, you know. The old college try listen.
Good. I like that. That was good. That was good. Go ahead.
And that's actually a good segue though, real quick, because this movie had also a good soundtrack. So
yes, it did. It very much did.
Yeah.
Shane, go ahead and speak on the film.
Well, you know, we have a theme where I like to, you know, do a different movie from, you know, each kind of genre I can think of. So this was our movie for the neo-Western, or the modern Western, however you want to say it. And, you know, I was debating between this and a couple others, you know, like Wind River and other things that Taylor Sheridan all wrote, because he's just an amazing writer, but... Anyways, I chose this one because, well, for a few reasons. First of all, I think, you know, it's a good example of just a simple yet intriguing premise that is made interesting by some really wild, quirky, and, you know, very in-depth characters and how they navigate said conflict. You know, and this is a lot of the best movies follow this formula, and, you know, this is no different. You know, from the very first scene, you get a very clear idea of who our two main characters are, how they act, what their relationship is like, you know, and same with the sheriffs that end up chasing them. You kind of get their weird relationship. You understand it pretty early on. And, I just think this movie is, you know, it's pretty quick, but it doesn't, you know, it really doesn't need to be dragged out super long, because it's just, you know, these guys are robbing banks to try and save their family farm, basically. And that's, I mean, you know, it's...
Is it an absolute classic?
I mean, it's from 2016, so it's okay. I wouldn't say it's a classic, but...
You just threw a wrench in the gears. Okay.
But it's very well, received. I like the dynamics between everybody and kind of the, you know, the metaphors for, or metaphors, the themes involving, mm-hmm. you know, like, involving class, you know, and like how families just get stuck in generational
and So it is not Yellowstone, the TV show.
No.
Although you could one could argue it would be a great spinoff of it.
Oh, yeah. That's a fairly good same point. Yes,
sort of vibe.
I am going to let the younger fellows go on from here because I am clearly too old.
No. I've seen everything, so don't worry.
Yeah, because leave it to me. I would have been yelling, you know, Lonesome Dove.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah, we are going to do an actual 1800s Western later on.
Oh crap!
I haven't decided which one yet, but anyway.
Rob's oh crap just made that so much better.
Folk talk. Shane, how old are you?
24.
You're 20. Oh, good.
All four of us are the same age. Yeah, we're all 24, I think.
Yeah.
Dude, the fact that you know Lonesome Dove, I am very impressed.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I've seen everything. But anyways, have you seen Metropolis from 1927?
Negative.
I have.
I've at least seen the poster and like some of it.
No, it's kind of boring. But anyways, no. So the so that was the main kind of the main reasons I chose it. But there was also a third thing, which is I noticed that a lot of, you know, these Western movies that are kind of set in like the current day, like this No Country for Old Men, as another example, that's one that we did last year. One thing I notice, this is just a nitpick of mine that I have with all of them, is that I feel like the first two acts are amazing. And then act three is always just like, you know, so disappointing and unfulfilling. And that's no different here. I don't know what it is about these movies that makes me feel that way, but I don't know.
It doesn't come to like a supernatural conclusion, but that's the thing I want to kind of piggyback on. And that's kind of the only thing I really want to say about Hell or High Water is, God damn it, I miss simple films. I miss films that are just, this movie's about two bank robbers who are brothers and the sheriff that are trying to chase them. Here's the flipping movie, not, oh, here's this movie and a bunch of other universe tie-ins or this or that or whatever. It's like, no, I miss this type of film. And I love that we get to do these type of films that are just simple and easy and have really clear and important message to them. And this movie is no different. Will, what was your impression of the film?
Because, oh, yeah, go ahead.
Honestly, it's a pretty good one. I think Chris Pine's, I always think he's always a great, good actor. When I saw him, it reminds me of that Wonder Woman movie, the first one.
It's very similar in terms of style for him. Yes.
Yeah. So honestly, it was pretty good. I thought that, I look it up, they said it was tied into a real life scenario of an economic collapse. And honestly, this is the type of stuff you probably could see. I remember like a Red Dead Redemption type of scenario. I think, especially with these cowboys and these outlaws, and they're trying to, you know, like I said, like trying to get this money to help their farm. And with Red Dead, it's mostly about with this anti-hero type guy doing what he has to do to survive in this world of a dog eat dog world. So honestly, I like these type of movies, and I agree. I like these type of movies, and also I like these movies where it's all about, you know, the protagonist trying to do this stuff that doesn't feel like, you know, the good type, good nature of, they do this like bad type of actions that honestly don't really see like those protagonists, goody two shoe protagonists that they do. So honestly, I feel like this movie really resonated with that and really resonated with all the anti-hero stuff that I like, you know, got your Wolverines and your Deadpools that don't really fit the natural, prototypical, you know, everyday protagonist as a protagonist that has flaws. And they have to do this, especially with this movie, of trying to get this money and fight from the law, but they try to do it for a good cause. So honestly, that's, I like those type of films.
Continue, Shane, on what I said with the simplicity of this film.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to say. Because, you know, people are always, you know, having gone to film school and studied screenwriting for so many years and learning about it and just, you know, what makes stories good and what doesn't, et cetera, et cetera. It's people always, you know, who don't know as much about writing. And I was guilty of this. You know, they're always trying to come up with stories that it's like, okay, listen to this insane original idea I have where, I don't know, it's, you know, fill in the blank. But that's not usually what people find interesting. You know, where it's like some super involved plot that you're like, what is going on? You know, and you're like having to try super hard to stick. Like, for instance, you know, Tenet. I know you love that movie, Robert, but
it's one of my favorite movies ever made. It's so fucking good. Right.
But most people, myself included, don't really care for it because it's just like unnecessarily complicated and confusing.
Yeah. It took me a long time to understand what was going on. I will say that.
But the types of stories that people like are ones where it's a simple premise and the interesting stuff comes from just how the characters unfold in the story.
I do not want to interrupt you because everything thing is beautiful, but you take a movie like Good Will Hunting is as unbelievable as I think it is.
Right.
The way it's written, you know, the way Robin Williams' character is, the way Matt, what's his name's younger brother, so fantastic.
Yeah, Tommy, I love that you bring this up because I love that you bring up Good Will Hunting because it explains that it kind of wraps this up so well of like, look at a simple story that's incredibly character driven, right? It's just another example of those movies that are so effective and so popular because of that, those pieces.
And even, you know, a movie like the original Star Wars, it seems like this weird, wild, crazy concept. And yeah, the world is crazy, but like at its core, the actual story, it's really, I mean, it's like it's kind of a Western. Really, I mean, like, it's just about a boy on a farm who meets this old religious figure, you know, and he's like, oh, let's go on this adventure to save the princess. So then they go into town, and they go into a
guy who says stuff backwards, and we're just going to go with that.
But, so it's a crazy world in Star Wars, but the actual story is very simple. And then, but anyways, the point is, because people don't relate to situations that are insanely complicated and make no sense. People relate to just an everyday situation and how because humans are very complex individuals. We have a lot of emotions, a lot of thoughts, and just the ways that humans react and interact in that scenario. You know, and that's, I mean, that's why, yeah, like Good Will Hunting, you know, it's a guy who's really intelligent, working things out with his therapist, and that's, you know, just kind of learning about, trying to discover his life, and it, you know, like that's, yeah, or Forrest Gump, it's just this guy telling people on a bench all the weird things he's done in life, and then as it goes, you're like, you see how he navigates it, and you're like, oh, yeah, okay, or, yeah, I mean, I could go on. But
yeah, yeah, and they're all super popular.
Yeah, even listen to what's the Billy Joel song?
Oh my god, there's so many classics. There's so many classics that are simplistic like this.
But the one where he brings you through the entire 20th century, it's like,
we didn't start the fire.
We didn't start the fire.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like, did you just bring me through fucking 50 fucking years of American history?
That's why I love that Fallout Boy redid it, because it's the same sort of thing, even though Billy Joel's version was better. Yeah. Brandon, wrap this into a bow for us, so we can call it a night here. Hell or high water. And you said something I think that was also really simplistic too in our chat, which is really good movie, really short. I'm like, yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's one of the things I liked about it. When we've done Westerns in the past, or when I've watched Westerns in the past, it tends to get dragged out for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, whatever it is. This is slightly over an hour and a half of just a relatable story about just a family's survival. And like, and then more importantly, just the survival of just people just trying to get by, whether that's in Jeff Bridges' case of the Texas Ranger, of him just trying to get towards retirement, or whether that's just, you know, or, you know, dealing with his partner, who he kind of like has like a love-hate thing with, or it's just the two brothers and how they navigate being, I mean, they love each other, but they're two completely different people. And that was even referenced. I mean, it was clear throughout the movie, but it was made clear by the end when Jeff Bridges, you know, character, his Texas Ranger, walks into the office and says to obviously the lady at the desk, you know, I guess the one he works with, the one he knows, at the police station, and was like, they're like, oh yeah, we went through these guys' files, and the one brother has been in and out of jail several times. He's a career criminal, all these different things. But the one brother, there's nothing tying him to this. He doesn't have a criminal record. He's been clean. He has a wife and two kids. Like, one guy has clearly lived the straight life the best he can. And one guy is clearly taken every wrong avenue he possibly could. And it's just also, it's made clear, even in the one scene where they're renting a hotel room, or, you know, inside the casino for a night, he's banging the lady behind the desk, the girl behind the desk, you know, the older brother, but while the younger brother is just on his side sleeping, just trying to get through the night and get ready for the next day. Like, the morality of both guys is different. And there's one scene I love, and I love because it's just, you know, it also just shows how desperate you have to be to make ends meet, especially when you're talking about an economic crisis. Like, these two are willing to resort to crime to make something, you know, to turn their fortunes around. But there's one point in the movie that I thought was really interesting because it has a double meaning, and I don't know if anybody else caught it. But when he's talking early on, when the younger brother is the only one left in the diner, and he's talking to the waitress who's kind of flirting with him, and he's talking about his kids, I mean, especially his oldest son, and I think he says to her that, oh, everybody says that they look like me, but I think they look like I'm the only one that thinks that they'd take after their mother. That's not just a looks thing. I think he's also meaning personally.
Yes,
the
character, I love that.
The
yes.
character of the kids.
Yes, yep.
And,
yes.
And that was one thing that I thought was interesting because, you know, as a he admits that he's tried to live his life the best he can. And you can tell he's remorseful for some of the things he's had to do to get by. While the older brother just doesn't have a conscience. And it's one of those things where you look at it, even the only time you really see a shred of decency from the older brother kind of peek through is the very end when he pretty much sacrifices himself for his younger brother and for his family. And that's, you know, you just don't see it throughout the movie. And it's like, oh, you know, where are you going? And he's basically just taking off down the road. He doesn't really tell him. And he's like, just don't worry about it. You know, like that's a moment where you kind of see it come full circle. But this movie, like Chris Pine, I mean, he plays these characters. So he's kind of like these more macho, but still there's something deeper under the surface kind of level characters. Yep. He's good at doing that. And I mean, Jeff Bridges, what can you say? Jeff Bridges is just everything he does. He gives 110%. And Jeff Bridges is so good because, I mean, you know, everything that he's done, everything I've liked, you know, like I've liked how in recent years he's really leaned into playing a lot of Western characters. Like, you know, when you think about it, what was it? The silly movie he did, the RIPD thing. You know, he plays an older policeman, like a cowboy policeman. And that's kind of like, because Jeff Bridges just has that kind of charisma to be a cowboy and things like that. And I like the fact that he leans into it and just he has that voice, you know, the kind of that gravelly and, you know, kind of way about him. So he just leans into a character like that so perfectly. But this movie, it's crazy.
And he was the dude.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I was going to bring it up, but I wasn't sure if I should in this context. I was going to bring it up, though. I was thinking about it. But, you know, when I think about just this movie, too, like, there was not a lot of action in a very short movie, but every scene had some sort of weight to it or tension or, you know, just, you know, uneasiness about it where you just, what was going to happen next. Like, I like the fact that the movie didn't bore me despite it being a crime and drama. You'd figure there'd be, you know, a lot more like worked up into it, but it's another one of those movies where it said a lot without saying much at all. And that's what I like about it is that it in such a short time frame, it really brought out a lot. It gave you a good story. It gave you a good sense of who all the characters were. You know, you knew, you know, it talked about, you know, there's a lot of themes like, you know, like rich and poor, you know, right and wrong, you know, where do you fall on the morality line between good and bad? What is the makeup of a good man versus somebody who, you know, isn't as, you know, as I guess straight and narrow. And just, you know, how far are you willing to go for the people you love? So it's definitely a really good movie. I loved it. I loved that it packed so much in just over a little over an hour and a half. So, you know, short, but sweet in so many ways. And I mean, we didn't even give ratings, but if I had to rate
eight for me.
I'm probably going to say it's one of those I'm going to come back to. That's rare that I say that about a lot of these movies, but it's definitely one I'm going to come back to sooner rather than later. Like I usually say, I'm going to come back to it, and I never kind of get around to it, even though I want to. This is one I'll definitely go back to.
All right. So B, how often do you rewatch a movie?
That, it's interesting. It depends for me. It depends on
you know, obviously, conversation is open to everybody, but how often do you rewatch a movie?
Only for doing it for the show. Really, I never watch movies twice. I have too much to go through.
You're like Denzel Washington, where he doesn't want to make this he doesn't want to be in sequels. He wants to do one movie and keep going on. Although with the sequel that he's done, The Equalizer is fantastic. Though that series is, I love it. But I am a movie rewatcher. If I like it enough, I will rewatch it. I mean, if it's a movie that if it's the John Wick series or if it's the Fast and Furious, if it's stuff that I really love, oh my God, I could watch it 1,000 times and never get sick of it. Star Wars, I'll never get sick of it. But when it comes to movies that we've done for the show, certain actors that I love, when Shane will give us a movie for the week and I'm like, yes, I want to do it. I really want to do that. I'm like, that's the movie I'll go back and kind of rewatch because I love the actors in it, or I love the story or genre, whatever it is. Depends on the genre, depends on the actors, it depends on the story, how much I kind of like it or relate to it. But I'll rewatch it. Not everybody will rewatch movies. A lot of people just don't like, so they'd rather watch, nowadays in 2024, people want to watch more shows than movies, I guess. But
that's part of why we do this, because movies need more love.
Yeah, because I love movies to death. And so when it comes to a movie like this, and the movie that we've done this week, this is a movie I'll come back to.
For me, there's a short list. And it's like, yeah, I will watch Goodfellas every time I see it's on. I will watch Forrest Gump every time I see it's on.
Yeah.
I will probably watch any of the Lord of the Rings anytime I see they're on. That's the grounds that I live in.
That's a good thing though. And it's like, I'll come back to this, probably a couple times, because the first half watching it, I'm like, I like it. Don't know if I'm really. It's funny because Shane was like, oh yeah, first two acts good, third act with whatever. It was predictable, but the thing is, I got more invested as the movie went on, rather than less. So even though I kind of knew what it was setting up for and where we were kind of going, I was like, these are the kind of movies I like because they're not going to drag it out. They're going to make it relatable, and they're going to make it I'm one of the people that watches movies. I'm like, if I can have fun with it, if I can find fun in it, I will rewatch it. So it's like, for this, I found it fun and interesting just because it shows you just the dynamic struggle between people, different classes, things like that. So if I have to rate this one, I'm not gonna give it an 8. I'm gonna go higher. I'm gonna go high. I'm gonna give it a 9.
You gotta remember that for when we rate these. Will, how do you rate it, and how do you feel about rewatching films?
I will give the movie, I'll probably give it a 6, just because there's some goods, and then there's also some bads that most people probably not gonna be interested in the movie or rewatch it, but it's a good one just for a life lesson about family, economy, and morality. But and also for the rewatch part, the only time usually I will rewatch a movie if there's like a sequel or there's another installment that comes and I try to rewatch just to get more familiar with it, because sometimes I might forget, because usually movies, when they have like a next installment, usually either a year or 2 years apart, depending on when the production is created. So I usually do that, but also maybe just watch a movie or something like that. If I'm not having much to do, I would usually rewatch that. Probably if there's a scene that I probably want to see, or I probably felt that, oh man, there's something that you missed or something that's important, you probably want to go back to see what that scene is, or maybe that scene is funny, I'll probably rewatch it. So if there's like a meaning behind me rewatching it for certain parts of it, then yeah, I would watch it. But I usually just rewatch it just, get more familiar with certain like a series of movies.
All right. So Will, I have to jump in right now, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
you were just talking about a scene that is worth rewatching an entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Titans. How many times have you said left side, strong side, left side, strong side?
we did it over the summer partially for that reason, I think.
First of all, those two actors are absolutely incredible together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is rewatchable for just everything that was going on, racial and tensions and everything that they, attacked with that movie, and Denzel and the little girl. Oh my God. I
love Denzel.
Yeah, so good, so good.
People so cool with that film. Football players. Have you seen that? People still quote that film to DM football players with. When Denzel is like, Shane knows when Denzel is talking to the team and addressing them, saying like, you drop a pass, you run a lap or run a mile, whatever the hell it was. It's like, yeah, it's like people have literally quoted that and DM'd it to like Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think Amon-Ra posted it like before the season started. He was like, look at the crap I'm getting in my DMs from people trying to this is insane.
Talking to who was the guy from Scrubs? I forget his name, but he's like, oh, are you having fun? And he was like, yeah, football's fun. And he's like, really? Like, no, maybe a little bit. I'm not sure. He's like, no, no fun, sir. No fun, sir. Zero fun.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Well, absolutely.
Yeah, but I would say the movie I would rewatch the most is arguably Waterboy. I think that's probably the funniest football movie I ever seen in my life. You're like, don't talk about my mama. your water sucks.
Oh my goodness.
Your water sucks. It really, really sucks.
Shane, what's your rating before we call it a night here?
Yeah, well, first of all, movies that I rewatch. For me, it's a pretty short list. It's Marvel, Star Wars, Mission Impossible, or like classics like Forrest Gump, Shawshank, The Godfather, whatever, that those sort of things.
All right. Can I make the admission to you that I made to my friend Saul earlier today? I've never seen The Godfather.
A lot of people haven't. It's okay.
I've only seen parts of it. I gotta get it done. It's okay.
As someone from New Jersey, it's a rite of passage to watch The Godfather. So I've watched it plenty of times.
Either movies like those or like comedy classics like The Waterboy, or Ferris Bueller's Day Off, that kind of thing. I'll always watch those. Other than that,
are you into Anchorman or like?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The Wedding Singer.
Yeah. Robert and I were talking about The Wedding Singer yesterday. Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah. Anything like Will Ferrell, Adam Sandler. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Most things Jim Carrey. Most.
how ridiculous is Liar Liar?
But yeah, or Batman and Robin, or no?
Yeah, please roast me one more time for my Christmas pick last year.
Oh Jesus, well, it's fine.
Oh no, he was a good Grinch.
Exactly.
Anyways, yeah, no, but Hell or High Water, I'd probably give a B+. Not bad, but it's just like I feel like there are others that are better.
Shane is the Russian judge of movies.
Like, what do you mean?
Like, there's so many. Like, I feel like B+ is always like your watermark grade. Like, that's always where you end up. Like,
I'm almost like, I guarantee, I think if we pull the movies from last year and then the two we've done so far, maybe the ones in the off season, I guarantee it averages out to a B plus. It's gotta be, most of the movies gotta be like a B plus.
For me, it probably would average out to an 8, because 8's kind of my benchmark as well. So yeah.
Well, I mean, if we're talking like in terms of all movies I've seen, the benchmark is probably more like C plus or B minus.
Hmm.
But I don't pick bad movies for this show, so
yeah.
Therefore,
we're doing Venom 2 in 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Yeah.
Well, there goes the streak,
which isn't my choosing, but
no, we're doing it for Venom 3.
For next week's movie, I'd like to do a mystery. That's cool.
Oh, shit. Yeah, give me one.
I got a few options. We'll go with whichever one nobody has seen. Option one, The Usual Suspects. Have we seen that?
No.
No. It's a total cast of nobodies in that one.
Yeah. I've heard of it, never actually watched it.
So. Will, have you?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of fucking nobodies in that movie.
Yeah. Which,
Will, have you seen it or no?
Oh, what's that?
The usual suspects.
I've seen The Usual Suspects.
I never did.
Okay.
You have homework.
The nobodies in that movie include people like Kevin Spacey and Benicio del Toro, and you know.
That is true.
Just run the gauntlet of like the best actors you've ever seen.
All right.
And fun fact, that was Christopher McQuarrie, who directed the most recent Mission Impossible movies and wrote the Top Gun Maverick script. That was his first script that he wrote, was The Usual Suspects.
Oh, okay.
And it was directed by Bryan Singer, who did X-Men 1, 2, and Days of Future Past.
I just don't know that I would consider the actual movie a mystery.
I mean, let me give the other options first. Like mystery detective, whatever. So there's that. Another one I was considering is Prisoners.
Never seen that.
Never seen it.
From Denis Villeneuve.
More Denis Villeneuve.
Roger Deakins. Yeah, which we just did.
I feel like we almost have to disqualify, like, because we've done it so early, we have to disqualify The Usual Suspects because of Benicio del Toro, because we just did them last week, and I feel like we have to disqualify Denis Villeneuve
because
the third option.
I would actually allow Usual Suspects because it's so fucking good.
Fair play. What's the third one?
Third one I was thinking of is Gone Girl.
Fuck, I've always wanted to see that.
I know people have talked about it, but I remember when that came out, that was big, but I never actually watched it. I wouldn't be opposed to that.
I'm not opposed to it.
That's Boston-based, right?
No, it's based in... it takes place in Missouri. And ironically, Kansas City Chiefs are playing on Sunday Night Football next week, which is...
Are they?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're in Missouri. Place. Let's go with that.
Yeah, I think Gone Girl is the answer. All right. All right. For Shane, for Brandon, for Will, for Tommy. Thank you for joining us, Tommy. Thanks for coming in as a guest, talk some football with us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Anytime.
Really, really appreciate it. Always fun having a guest on as well. And we will see you all back tomorrow. For Brandon to lose his mind over his Eagles.
Right.
And then Thursday we have fucking Jets Patriots.
Oh my god, why?
No, thank you. That's gonna be a 10-minute show.
I'm telling you, man, if it's like the Broncos and Colts, I'm ready.
Oh, God. All right. Well, for all of us, thank you so much. Have a wonderful Sunday night. I am extremely exhausted. It has been a very long day, as it normally is. Even more than normal with 10 NFL games in an early window. God damn it. Not going to do that ever again. But thank you guys for a wonderful night.
5 hours of sleep.
I woke up at like 5 and then I went back to bed after. I went back to bed at 8 and I woke up at like 9:30. So, yeah. Ugh. Super, super tired. But thank you guys. Have a wonderful rest of your day or rest of your night, rest of your week. And we will see you back tomorrow. Thank you guys.
Hey, everybody.
Peace.
Take care, guys.